So if you apply for a prompt engineer job in India today, you might be offered something like 5 lakh a year. Or, on the other hand, you might be offered 60 lakh.
Right.
Same job title, same year. Like that is a 1,100% difference in pay.
It's crazy.
It is. And so today we're basically cracking open this massive briefing document to figure out what exactly separates, a 5 lakh typist from a 60 lakh architect.
Yeah, I mean, it is the absolute definition of a distorted market.
Right.
Whenever you see a salary gap that wide for literally the exact same job title, it just tells you that the industry itself hasn't quite figured out what the role actually is yet.
Yeah, they're confused.
Exactly. We are looking at a space that is evolving so rapidly, almost violently, honestly, that HR departments literally cannot keep up with the engineering reality on the ground.
Okay, let's unpack this because that is our mission for this deep dive. We are going to decode this market distortion. Because if you're trying to navigate a career in artificial intelligence in 2026, understanding this gap is, well, it's the difference between stagnating and completely changing your financial trajectory.
Oh, absolutely.
So the sources we're looking at, they break down the real-world salary data for AI professionals in India. And I think the most striking takeaway is that the fundamental definition of prompt engineering has just been completely ripped up and rewritten.
Yeah, the transition we're seeing right now is this huge move from basic natural language interaction to like complex system architecture.
Okay.
A few years ago, the value was simply in knowing how to, talk to a large language model or LLM.
Just typing in the box.
Exactly, just typing in the chat box. But the data shows that today, that skill alone has been completely commoditized.
Wow, okay.
The premium is now on engineering reliability. Like, if an enterprise is rolling out an AI tool to 10,000 customers, it cannot just generate a clever response, most of the time.
Right, it can't just be a party trick anymore.
Exactly. It has to execute flawless, structured operations every single time without hallucinating or making things up.
Which, brings to mind an analogy that I think perfectly captures this salary divide we're looking at.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so the 5 lakh job, the basic prompter is essentially the person who orders food at a restaurant.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Like you could be incredibly articulate. You can say, I want the steak, medium rare, sauce on the side, and bring it out in exactly 15 minutes.
Very specific.
Exactly. You know exactly what to ask for to get a good result. But the 60 lakh job, that is the head chef.
Yes.
You aren't just placing an order, you are designing the entire menu, sourcing the ingredients, running the kitchen staff, and basically building a system that guarantees every single plate that goes out to the dining room is perfect.
Hundreds of times a night.
Right. Hundreds of times a night.
That framing completely tracks with the data we're seeing. I mean, the person placing the order brings a small amount of immediate value, sure, but the architect running the kitchen is the one actually building the product that generates revenue for the business.
Right.
And when you look at the experience tiers in the briefing document, you can see that transition mapped out mathematically.
Let's actually map that out. Let's look at the numbers. Because the entry-level numbers, and here we're talking, 0 to 1 year of experience, they sit right around 4 to 8 lakh per annum,
Right.
with the average hovering around 5 or 6 lakh. And the day-to-day tasks at this level are very much in that ordering category we just talked about.
Exactly. They're doing basic prompt testing, maybe manually evaluating the AI's outputs to see if they're good.
Cleaning up data sets, that sort of thing.
Yeah, cleaning data. They are participating in the workflow, but they aren't designing it.
Right.
Then, as professionals move into the mid-level, which the data defines as, 1 to 3 years, the compensation shifts to a range of about 6 to 15 lakh.
Okay, but here is where the briefing document introduces a concept that I think should be a massive wake-up call for anyone in this field.
The plateau.
The plateau.
Yes.
Once you hit that mid to senior level, so around 3 to 6 years, there is a hard salary ceiling sitting right at 20 lakh.
Right. And what's fascinating here is the mechanical reason for that ceiling.
Where does it happen?
It comes down to diminishing returns. If you remain limited to just writing text prompts in a user interface, I don't care how clever those prompts are, you simply cannot generate more than 20 lakh of value for a mid to large enterprise.
You just hit a wall.
You hit a wall. The massive leap to 30, 40, or 60 lakh plus only triggers when you stop treating the AI as a chatbot and start treating it as a programmable reasoning engine. You
Wow.
have to basically combine prompting with actual software engineering.
So the message is that tenure alone won't save you.
No.
You cannot just be a basic prompt writer for 10 years and expect to automatically scale up to 60 lakh.
It just won't happen.
But looking at the data, it also reveals another massive variable, which is geography.
Yes.
When you look at the map of India, there is a massive gravity, well, around specific tech hubs that are just pulling in these top-tier salaries.
Yeah, the density of capital and talent in certain cities creates this intense microeconomy. Bangalore is the undisputed king here.
Right?
They're pulling typical ranges of 15 to 20 lakh just as a baseline for mid-level talent,
Wow.
and frequently pushing much, much higher for those architect roles.
And Hyderabad is right there with it, right?
Yeah.
Pulling 13 to 18 lakh. Then you have Mumbai, it's 12 to 17 lakh. Delhi NCR falls around 11 to 16 lakh. Chennai is offering approximately 11 to 15. And Pune generally sits around 10 to 15 lakh.
Right.
So, I mean, if I'm looking at this purely geographically, I need to pack my bags and move to Bangalore immediately.
Well, that was the conventional wisdom, right? Bangalore and Hyderabad dominate because they have a dense concentration of Gen AI startups, global tech innovation labs, and, venture capital.
Right, the money is there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you have 10 companies on the same street fighting for the exact same architect, compensation just skyrockets.
Yeah, supply and demand.
But the briefing document highlights a geographic cheat code that completely bypasses this traditional hierarchy.
Remote architecture roles.
Precisely. If you possess those system building skills that command 60 lakh, your physical location is becoming increasingly irrelevant.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah. The sources note that engineers sitting in, say, Pune or Chennai, who are building autonomous AI systems for startups based in San Francisco or London or even Bangalore, they are locking in international or top-tier market rates.
So remote work basically decouples your earning potential from your local zip code,
Exactly. It's the ultimate cheat code.
which means it's less about where your desk is and more about who is signing your paycheck
Right.
and how they make their money. Let's follow the money through the industry breakdown, because a 60 lakh salary isn't just, an arbitrary number HR pulled out of a hat.
Yeah.
It has to be justified by the revenue the company is actually making.
Yeah, the economic model of the employer dictates everything here. Our sources show that software as a service and dedicated product companies offer the absolute highest compensation.
And the logic there is pretty straightforward, right? Because for a SaaS company in 2026, generative AI isn't just an internal tool to, I don't know, make HR run faster.
No, not at all.
It is baked directly into the product they sell to their customers. The AI is the revenue driver.
Yes, if your model fails, the product fails.
Exactly. Contrast that with, say, the healthcare sector. I saw they were further down the list.
Right, so healthcare has massive capital, obviously, and they are absolutely integrating AI, but the salary growth and job creation for prompt engineers are noticeably slower.
Why is that?
Well, the stakes explain the speed. I mean, in a SaaS app, a hallucination might annoy a user, right? In healthcare, a hallucination regarding a patient's dosage can be
Oh,
fatal.
wow. Yeah.
The regulatory hurdles and the extreme accuracy requirements demand a much slower, much more cautious adoption cycle.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
I also see commerce and fintech ranking very high for compensation.
Right.
And that's primarily because they are using AI for things that immediately hit the bottom line, right?
Yeah.
Like scale personalization for shopping and algorithmic analysis for finance.
Exactly. It's direct ROI.
But let me stop you here because I want to push back on something that's been bugging me about these job postings.
Sure, go for it.
So wait, if I go on a job board right now, I can see two listings, both a prompt engineer.
Right.
One is at a massive traditional IT services firm.
Yeah.
The other is at a super lean fintech startup. If the title is identical, how can the day-to-day reality and the paycheck be so wildly different?
Well, the term the briefing document uses for this is the title blur.
Title blur,
And it
right.
is honestly the biggest trap in the current job market. Yeah. A traditional prompt engineer, the role capped at that 20 lakh plateau we talked about, spends their day refining instructions and reviewing outputs.
Right.
But a generative AI engineer, the role commanding the 60 lakh premium, is doing full stack system architecture.
But HR departments are still just slapping the prompt engineer label on the architect job.
Constantly. They are using this outdated, familiar title for a radically evolved job.
Man, that's confusing.
It is. You might apply for a role expecting to just write text prompts, and then in the interview, they ask you to spin up a vector database cluster, integrate an API, and build an autonomous agent pipeline.
So the listener's takeaway here is basically never trust the headline.
Never.
You have to read the fine print of the actual job description. Like, if the responsibilities mention writing and testing, you're looking at the 5 lakh to 20 lakh track.
Right.
If the responsibilities mention deploying pipelines and integrating external data, you're looking at the 60 lakh track.
Exactly. And that realization forces a very specific question for anyone wanting to reach that upper tier.
Right, which is, how do I actually get into the kitchen?
Exactly.
Because if the key to breaking the ceiling is moving from a basic prompter to a Gen AI system builder, we need to map out the technical roadmap. Like, how does a professional actually level up in 2026?
So the sources outline a very deliberate 6-step technical progression.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's not about learning one magic tool. It's about layering concepts. Step one is mastering the fundamentals.
Okay.
But this doesn't mean just asking good questions. It requires mechanical techniques like few-shot prompting and forcing structured outputs.
Okay, let's unpack the mechanisms there because those terms get thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
Zero-shot is essentially asking the AI a question cold turkey, right?
Yes, providing absolutely no examples.
Okay.
Few-shot prompting is fundamentally different. It involves priming the model by embedding specific, highly formatted examples of the desired input and output directly within your instruction.
Oh, I see.
You are basically teaching the model the exact pattern of logic you want it to follow before it even processes your actual request.
Got it. And what about structured outputs?
That is all about making the AI talk to machines instead of humans.
Wait, talk to machines?
Yeah, because if the AI replies with this beautifully written paragraph, a human can read it, sure, but a database cannot process a paragraph.
Oh, right.
Forcing structured outputs means instructing the LLM to return its answer in a strict data format, like JSON.
Okay, so if I'm forcing the AI to output JSON data so another system can read it, that immediately explains step two of the roadmap, which is programming.
The inevitable next step.
Right.
You don't need to be a 20-year veteran of computer science, but you absolutely must know Python.
Okay.
You need to understand how to interact with APIs. This is the bridge. You are writing scripts that send the data to the LLM, receive the JSON output, and pass it along to the next part of your application.
Okay, so now my Python script is talking to the LLM via an API. But here is the classic problem out of the box, that LLM doesn't know anything about my company's internal data.
Nope.
It doesn't know our HR policies. It doesn't know our user history.
Mm.
How do we bridge that gap without, I don't know, manually pasting 1,000 documents into the prompt every single time?
And this is where we hit step three. And this is arguably the most important mechanism in modern AI architecture.
Okay.
Or retrieval augmented generation.
Explain the mechanics of RAG for us. Break it down.
Okay. Think of a standard LLM as a brilliant high school student.
Okay.
They've read a lot of general knowledge, but they haven't studied for your specific test.
Right. They just know the internet, basically.
Exactly. If you ask them a highly specific question about your company, they might guess.
Which is a hallucination.
Right. A hallucination. RAG changes that entire workflow. Before the AI even answers, your system first retrieves the exact relevant documents from your company's internal files. It hands those specific documents to the AI and says, read these 3 pages and base your answer only on what is written right here.
Oh, wow. So if RE is the act of handing the AI the right textbook, how does the system know which pages to grab out of millions of company documents in a fraction of a second?
That requires step 4 storage, specifically vector databases.
Okay.
The sources explicitly mandate knowing tools like Chroma, VAI, Pinecone, or Weaviate.
But what makes a vector database different from a normal database? Like, why can't I just use a standard spreadsheet search?
Because a standard database searches by exact keywords.
Right.
If you search for dog, it only looks for the letters D-O-G.
Right. Basic control F.
Exactly. A vector database works entirely differently. It converts text into high-dimensional mathematical numbers. They're called embeddings.
Embeddings.
And these represent the actual meaning of the text. So if you search for canine or puppy, the vector database understands the conceptual relationship and retrieves the right document, even if the exact keyword isn't in there.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah. It's like a highly specialized index at the back of a massive library that allows the RAG system to find the perfect paragraph in milliseconds.
Okay, so let's track the build so far. We have the Python script at step 2, using RAG step 3 to pull conceptually relevant data from a vector database like Pinecone step 4.
Right.
And it's using few-shot prompting step 1
yeah.
to ensure the AI formats the answer correctly.
You got it.
That is a really robust system. But the AI is still just answering questions. What if I want it to actually do something? Like, what if I want it to issue a refund or send an email?
And that leaps into step five, autonomy and AI agents.
Okay.
This is where you encounter frameworks like LangChain and LlamaIndex. This involves a concept called tool calling.
Tool calling. Give me a metaphor for tool calling.
Okay. Imagine a manager who is brilliant at strategy, but terrible at arithmetic.
Fair enough.
If you ask the manager to solve a complex equation, they will fail. But if you give that manager a calculator, a tool, they know exactly how to punch in the numbers to get the perfect result.
Oh, I see.
Tool calling allows an LLM to recognize when it cannot complete a task on its own and autonomously reach out to an external tool like a weather API, a calculator, or a customer database to actually execute an action.
Wow. So in a customer service scenario, the AI agent receives a complaint, checks the policy using GARIG,
right,
determines a refund is valid, and then uses tool calling to actually ping Stripe or PayPal to issue the money without a human ever clicking a button.
Exactly. That is an agentic workflow. And bidding that workflow is what commands a 60 lakh salary.
Right.
But as step six of the roadmap dictates, with great autonomy comes the need for absolute quality control.
Because if an autonomous agent goes rogue and starts issuing $1,000 refunds to everyone who complains, the company is bankrupt by noon.
Exactly, which is why the final layer of the architect's skill set involves building evaluation frameworks and guardrails.
Guardrails, okay.
You have to write code that constantly monitors the AI, tests its reliability under edge cases, and physically prevents it from executing unauthorized actions.
Okay, so that is the complete technical stack. Fundamentals, Python, RAG, vector databases, autonomous agents, and guardrails.
Yep.
But here is something the briefing document stresses that I think is absolutely critical for our audience.
What's that?
Here's where it gets really interesting. You can memorize that six-step list. You can spend a month taking online courses and collect a dozen digital certificates. But the market doesn't actually care about your certificates.
No, not at all. Certificates are a baseline, not a differentiator. Yeah. What the market demands is proof.
Exactly. The sources are incredibly explicit about the portfolio imperative. Yeah. You cannot just say you understand LangChain on your resume. You have to build a functional autonomous agent application.
Right.
You have to be able to sit in an interview, open your laptop, and say, here is a RAG pipeline I built that ingests PDF reports and queries them in real time.
Yeah.
You have to demonstrate the execution.
And if you want to take that portfolio and apply a massive multiplier to your earning potential, the briefing document points to one specific asset.
Which is?
Domain knowledge.
Domain knowledge. Let's expand on that.
Yeah.
Because this feels like the secret sauce. How does understanding a specific industry multiply the value of your code?
Okay, let's use the healthcare sector as an example again.
Okay.
A highly skilled but generic generative AI engineer builds a RAGI system for a hospital.
Right.
It works perfectly, pulling patient records to help doctors diagnose symptoms. But that engineer doesn't really know healthcare regulations. So the system accidentally feeds personally identifiable patient data into an external LLM via an API.
Oh, man. Which is a massive APO violation
Right. And
a million-dollar lawsuit waiting to happen.
Exactly. Now, take a generative AI engineer who possesses deep domain knowledge in healthcare.
Sure.
They build the exact same RAG system, but because they understand the industry, they design the architecture to automatically mask and redact all personal information before it ever hits the vector database or the LLM.
That's brilliant.
They understand the regulatory friction of the industry, and they just solve it right there in the code.
Right, right.
That person isn't just writing software. They are eliminating institutional risk. That is why specialized domain knowledge dictates premium compensation.
You're not just a builder. You're a specialized problem solver.
Exactly.
So looking at this incredibly demanding six-step engineering reality, I have to ask the uncomfortable question.
Let's hear it.
The title of the document revolves around prompt engineering, but based on everything we've discussed today, is being a prompt engineer actually a viable long-term career path as we move past 2026?
Well, the consensus from the data provides a pretty nuanced reality check.
Okay.
The standalone role of a prompt engineer, like someone whose sole responsibility is typing text into a box, is rapidly declining. It is being absorbed.
Right.
However, the skill of prompt engineering has literally never been more critical.
So it's transitioned from being a standalone product to being just a core feature of a larger toolkit.
That's the perfect way to phrase it. Just like a software engineer needs to know SQL to manage a database, a generative AI engineer needs to know advanced prompting to manipulate an LLM.
It's just expected.
It is the foundational layer. The professionals who will really thrive are the ones who stop tying their identity to the title of prompt engineer and instead view themselves as system architects who use prompting as one of many tools to solve complex business problems.
Right. So the ultimate takeaway for our listener is to basically ignore the noise of the job titles.
Completely.
They are blurry, they are misused, and honestly, they will probably change again next year. Focus entirely on the mechanics.
Yes.
Learn the Python, build the RA pipelines, deploy the autonomous agents, and acquire that domain knowledge. Prove you can run the kitchen.
The future of this industry belongs entirely to the architects.
Which leaves me with a thought I want everyone listening to chew on today. We've just mapped out this incredible evolution. We watched the role go from simply asking a chatbot for a recipe to engineering these incredibly dense systems with vector databases and autonomous tool calling agents.
Mm-hmm.
We are telling you that you must become a system architect to survive. But what happens to this roadmap in another 2 or 3 years?
Mm.
When these foundational AI models become so impossibly advanced, so autonomously capable, that they can automatically spin up their own RAG pipelines.
Oh, right.
What happens when you just give an LLM a massive folder of data and it decides how to format the vector database and it writes its own guardrails? Are today's generative AI engineers, even the brilliant architects commanding 60 lakh a year, just busy building the very tools that will eventually replace the need for architects altogether?
That is the technological paradox of our time. I mean, every system we build basically accelerates the capability of the machine to build the next one itself.
A slightly terrifying but undeniably fascinating reality to keep in mind as you write your next line of code. Keep building, keep questioning the roadmap, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.